because we kind of put culture on a pedestal.
Yeah.
Right? We raise culture on a pedestal as this thing that you should never touch, you should never question.
Mm-hmm.
It should be there, it should stay there, and everyone should look up to culture. But when it comes to peer pressure and people coming up with new ideas, we don't really respect the individual.
Yeah.
Right? We don't respect the ideas that you're coming up with unless they have some root in the culture that we put on a pedestal. Like, why is it that we don't respect the memes, the ideas that come from the individual as compared to the culture, but it's basically the same thing?
Yeah.
Because what I'm saying today with this video might be watched by a kid in 50 years, 100, 200 years, and let's say it's now part of culture.
Mm-hmm.
Why should they listen to me just because I'm someone from the past? Do you get it?
Yeah. So in the book, I use the definition from Ngugi wa Thiong'o that says culture is a collective. It's a collection of the experiences of a people through history.
Right.
So my favorite book in the Bible is Ecclesiastes, and there's something that the teacher says in Ecclesiastes. He says there is nothing new under the sun. Something that has been done will be done later in the future.
I mean, do you think that's a bit presumptuous, though, to say that there's nothing new under the
sun?
Well,
it's true, there's nothing new under the sun.
How can we concretely determine that there's nothing new under the sun?
Every innovation is an advancement of something that is that already has a first principle. So,
of course,
the impact of any new innovation or any advancement, really, if we trace history and if we've looked from the time the world started to now, mm-hmm. we see it's a cycle. It's a cycle of seasons of human experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason why culture, and I am one of those people that really hold culture to high regard. The reason why culture should be held to such a high regard is our ancestors or our predecessors have experienced the world, have seen things that work and things that don't work.
But that was during their time,
exactly.
Hmm.
During their time.
Right.
And they've devised sort of like philosophies of life,
okay.
based on the things that work and the things that don't work. There is then the misconception of culture and tradition.
Mm.
Tradition then becomes a means of expression of culture, which should change and should be updated as we go on. That's the one that relates the individual with his current environment, the tradition, the means of expression of culture. But the basis or the fundamental point of value remains the same. Human life is sanctified. That's a fundamental point of value in culture.
Yeah.
Let's take maybe the cultural philosopher of Ubuntu.
Actually, continue. Yeah. I think we should stay on that human life one, because there's a very interesting topic about abortion that was going around. Yeah. So yeah, stay on
that. So you find that culture deals with the fundamentals.
Okay.
The fundamental importance of human life.
Right.
And then tradition then becomes a means of expression. When we say that human life is sanctified, does it mean that then someone who wants to like commit abortion
right.
should be allowed or should not be allowed? And that's what's updated as we go on, as the circumstances that surround us become different through each and every stage of life.
Okay.
So culture itself, the problem with directly going to attack culture instead of updating it, the problem with that is you destroy the fundamental value system that holds everything together. For example, there's a book by Nietzsche, if he's a philosopher, Friedrich Nietzsche, and he talks about the Western world killing God.
They did kill God.
And from there, you now look at the impact of that to their society, to how they live, the vulnerabilities that it leaves within the society. And that's the danger. Even in the Bible, the Ark of the Covenant was not supposed to be touched. There are things within our society that we should continuously hold sacred so that they hold the society together.
Okay.
But then we should update the way that we express the things that we hold as things of value.
All right. So, okay, I'll put the portion on the side for a bit.
Yeah.
But then, let's compare humans. Obviously, it's a bad comparison to compare humans to animals.
Yeah.
But in this case, if you want to, let's compare humans to animals and say, if you look at the human species, I don't think there's a species that has serial killers, right? People that kill for the sake of killing.
Well,
am I right? Am I okay? First of all, am I scientifically correct in assuming that?
It's quite difficult to really quantify because
remember
when the lion eats the deer, it's by instinct and not necessarily.
What can you say? That's cross species. I'm talking about a species that has potential baboons, to do harm to
baboons. Itself. Baboons do fight each other to death.
To death.
Yeah. If you.
But then they're not serial killers. You understand? Yeah. What I'm saying. A serial killer is someone who solely kills for the sake, maybe enjoyment, but for the sake of killing, right?
Yeah.
So, it's one of those abstract ideas that comes up when I talk about culture, because is it culturally right to commit murder? No, it's not. Are they serial killers? Yes. So my argument is culture always takes this high pedestal as being, or even religion.
Yeah.
The religion takes this high pedestal as if it was the creator of moral values. As if it, if there was no religion, people would be slaying each other all around. But then if we look at the evidence, it looks as if there's an instinct within us, not even culturally or morally or traditionally, that is not, it doesn't allow you to hurt someone to the extent where you kill them just for the fun of doing it, right? Well, and it's not really something you can ascribe to culture, can you? Can you ascribe and say people are moral, people do the right things, people respect each other because and solely because of this thing that us humans created, culture, tradition, religion?
So you find that morality is a really contentious topic,
right?
And one of the strongest arguments that helped the West to kill God was that you can actually derive moral value from facts, which is not true. There is no way in which you can derive moral value from a set of facts, because facts are objective. Your perception of facts is limited. And so one set of facts could justify murder. That's why you have...
Right.
Yeah.
I understand that.
And then a different set of facts presented could make that murder seem not so justified.
Right.
So it's quite difficult to derive moral value from things like facts. And one thing that culture and religion does is that it represents the world as a place of action. So it gives you a value hierarchy or a map for the things that you can be able to do or that you have to do for you to get what you want from life. And if you don't have such a thing that grounds you, then you will not have such a roadmap,
right?
You get me? If you read the book of Ecclesiastes,
right.
Ecclesiastes goes on to say that you should not be too bound to
the concrete.
Yeah. So you can't be too bound to anything. Actually, you can't be too bound to not having any structure around you. You can't be too bound by structure. You have to somewhere in between. That gives you a balance,
okay.
Because the way you update culture is by actually going
outside
the box of culture.
Exactly.
To learn and to explore
different
so
things, right?
My philosophy is to try and say, I think I've mentioned this to you in one of our podcasts, to say, think outside the box, not to escape the box but to expand the box, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. And so you are not limited by the domain of culture, by the domain of religion, but then your intention for going outside of it is not to escape it or to destroy it.
Why shouldn't you escape it? That's my question. Is why? Because it's why are we us? Okay, maybe I will assume
everything together. That's the thing.
How do we know it holds everything together? Because if that's all we've known, if that's all we've known, how can you assume that everything? It's like, okay, for example, let's say there's a rock right there, right? And for my whole life, I ascribe every meaning and everything that happens to me to that rock.
Yeah.
And I'm like, to my children, this rock is the meaning. This rock has everything.
Mm-hmm.
And people after that believe that this rock has meaning. Why are we assuming that everything is as a result of that? Like, what factual proof or what can I say? How can we be 100% sure that the things we ascribe meaning to are actually the things that provide meaning in our lives and the things that actually drive our behaviors?
Okay.
So, like culture, for example.
So, the end of this kind of question is one that is deeply philosophical and that goes on to even to question the existence of God,
right?
Which I might not be able.
Which to, I was kind to, of leading into. Yeah,
yeah. I might not be able to tackle right now, right, because of our time.
Okay.
On the other hand, you can't live in the cradle forever. You can't be clueless forever. So somebody might as well just lay it out for you and say, culture is for the convenience of culture, not you. How many times have your career aspirations, financial dealings, and aesthetic inclinations been squashed, twisted, rejected, and minimized by cultural values? And if you don't think culture is your enemy, ask the 18-year-old kid who is given a rifle and sent to the other side of the world to murder strangers if culture is his friend.